Right now it is time for the Frickin' Frack of Nick and Knack. Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys. It's time for Appraise This. You'll find them on the web at tqag.com and on a Tuesday morning right here on Robinhood Radio. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Both there with great audio, yes.
You hold that thought, because you're on, at least from my end, you're breaking up.
Well, people have been saying I've been breaking up for years, and I've managed.
I'm sorry, I walked into that.
I hope it gets, well, no, yes, that's a perfect thing. You know, you got to deliver occasionally openings for people to, you know, to jump in on. That's part of entertaining, and that's a great part of timing, is knowing when to give that opening and hoping, I hope that person takes me up on that. So,
yeah.
So anyway, well, I have a real varied list to talk about here today. Very varied. So I hope you got your, I hope you got your boots strapped on here. All right.
Sure thing.
And unfortunately, Greg, it. Sooner or later, we are going to go to that horrible place that we don't really like to go. But we'll save that for last.
That's okay, because we actually have been talking about it for the past couple of days, just because I've had some questions. And I'm starting to kind of a little bit understand, but we'll see how much I understand at the end of this.
All right.
Raise your question.
The first thing we'll start off with is Adolf Hitler's watch. It sold for $1.1 million. A Maryland auction house sold the wristwatch for $1.1 million. They estimated it was going to be between $2 and $4 million. It was described as a World War II relic of historic proportions. No kidding. Now,
yeah.
which you would think, Jewish leaders and others objected to that sale, saying it had little to no historical value. In an open letter signed by 34 Jewish leaders, just described that sale as abhorrent and called on the items that were, of course, from the head Nazi to be pulled from the auction. Now, I have feelings that, yes, Adolf Hitler was a horrible event and person, who changed the course of the world in a very, very bad way. But must we get rid of everything that brings back the sore spots in our memory? I know someone's making a profit on this, and that's the more abhorrent part of this. But I'm a believer that, you know, if you keep the image alive of Adolf Hitler and you let other generations know about this man, I think that's not a bad thing.
Well, I don't disagree with that, because I think the thing that would history is history, and the old saying that if you don't remember your history, you're going to end up repeating it. I think that's kind of a paraphrase of it. But, you know, people still need to be reminded. Now, I do think that the sale, if this stuff would have sold to benefit anti-Semitism, you know, like to, or some cause, altruistic cause, out of this abhorrent person, he actually ended up being able to enlighten other people against anti-Semitism by the organizations could have benefited from it. But the premise of just pure profit, I think that's equally abhorrent. I think if they were going to sell these things openly, as they did, which you have to kind of give them credit for, because most of this stuff usually is on the black market because of what it stands for. But I do believe that there is a place in auctions or in the sale of memorabilia that is not that's abhorrent, really. But I think there is a place in history for these things because they actually happened. And I kind of felt the same way about a lot of the statues. Now, the ones that were I understand the reasoning, but it's just like, why you can't erase our history because it's our history. It's just like you can't wake up one morning and have your eyes be brown if they're blue when you go to bed. That's my belief, and I don't. It's not something that I really condone. But if something good can come out of a teaching moment about these things, and keep them there to remind people of what evils have been in our past, so that we don't allow it to happen in the future. I think that's for me, a strong argument for these sort of freakish one-off things, as long as it's not something that it is benefiting just one person. You know, if this could benefit, the proceeds from this could benefit education against anti-Semitism, that would be much better than just one man selling these things and making a fortune off of it.
Now, Tim, this will make your hair fall out, being so,
what's
so
left active. Of it.
And that the auction house president didn't do himself any favor at the end. Bill Panagopoulos defended the auction and said, quote, "The buyer is a European Jew," end quote. Sometimes less is more, you know? This is like saying some of my best friends are black. I mean, it's amazing that he just had to go that one step further. Just have the auction and be done with it. I mean, that quote is going to stick with him now for a long, long time.
Yeah.
The vice president of the auction, she had a better quote, and it was about whether it's good or bad history, it has to be preserved. And that's kind of what I was thinking, is that, you know, we talk a lot about historical things and good things that have sold, and, you know, you have to take the good and the bad, because she also ends her quote by saying, if you destroy the history, there's no proof that it happened. And that goes to what Greg was saying earlier. And I think that really just sums it up. And I think right to the point, it is difficult. And we were, you know, auction houses are offered things like this all the time. And there are debates and there are discussions that happen before they are offered, and know that, hey, we're going to get some heat, or this may be controversial. But, you know, yeah, that quote, though, that didn't do many favors. Less is more.
That's one of the first things in my first really real good radio job in Kingston at WKNY. Joe Schuler, when I worked midnights. And after my first show, he just hung up a little sign. We had a talk and everything. And it was, he said, "I want you to put this up every night you're on the air. Less is more." And yeah. You know what? Yeah. I got the message. And over the years, you get that message and you realize that it's true. Well, anyway, I mean, we're in the age of everything from the past that was bad, that America did or happened in America, is being pulled and locked away, and you never learn. You won't learn from your past if you don't
that's
know
right.
It ever existed. You just won't learn.
I agree.
That's very succinct. In my clumsy explanation, yeah. Yours is much better. It gets to the point quicker. Yeah.
Well, let's get away from Adolf Hitler and go someplace else, from the sublime to the ridiculous. Han Solo original blaster gun from Star Wars is heading to auction, and it's got they call a low estimate of $300,000. I actually think seeing as it's a movie prop and it's not a real blaster, I think if they get $300,000 or more, that's pretty good.
Yeah, well, this is also anything with Star Wars. I think that it probably is conservative, because they also just will have provenance on where it came from. These items from any of the Star Wars films do not come up that often, so that they have this. The interesting thing is that it's this Rock Island auction company that is selling it. They actually are they are known for selling historic and contemporary guns, and it's interesting that they are offering this movie prop. But others have sold. The others have sold in the 500 to 800,000 range. So it'll be interesting to watch where this goes. But again, it's all of the George Lucas items, especially from Star Wars. I mean, he's kept a good number of them under lock and key, so that they don't end up at auction. But when they do, that's when the market responds in kind, because the desirability is there, and also the number of items that are available are not. You just can't go out and get a lightsaber or anything else from the film.
Well, also, and this is where I've learned from you guys over the years, provenance, and what also goes along with this blaster is, from one of the posters, that is a major, it's strapped on, he's wearing it in the poster for the movie. And so right. not only do you get that blaster, but you also get the poster of him wearing it and the Star Wars. So the provenance, that's why I think that $300,000 is a little low, because I think the thing will get around $500,000 again, simply because it's got, and like I said, I've learned so much from you guys since we've been doing this, it has that certain, I don't want to say genetic or whatever, but it's got that certain aspect there that will make it popular.
That it's right. That this is the right piece. That's what they're looking for. And just, Greg, I'll jump in just to give perspective. Is in 2017, the R2-D2 droid sold for $2.75 million, and an X-Wing miniature prop from A New Hope, that fetched $2.3 million just last month. So there's desirability for these items in the marketplace.
Well, I wonder what the low estimate on those things were, because that's kind of a good way to think, to judge what is possibly going to happen with this. Because sometimes, if the estimate is only 300 to 500 on some of those other things, and let's say that they sold for over $2 million, then I mean, this, it could also just be a strategy. Yep. In auction. Yeah. So we always, I think the hype behind it is probably going to be also something that they're trying to manage the expectations, because we all know what happens when, and we've talked about this, where we bring up something that hasn't been sold for a long time, or a one of only like a handful, and the estimate and the hype on it is these astronomical numbers that we just have said it's just not going to happen, and when it sells and it sells below the expectation, it just falls off the radar and you never see it again. So I'm thinking that this could also just be a strategy, an auction strategy, and honestly, estimates for auction items are just estimates, and a lot of times people think, if you estimate something between $300,000 and $500,000 and it comes in at $400,000, you're spot on. You're right in the ballpark, and that's really a good estimate. And estimates need to set the expectations of what they will sell for, not the hype of what you hope they sell for. So I don't know. I think 300 to 500 is, I think that's probably a good beginning. But I also have a feeling it's going to sell for more than that.
You know, Tim, I'm going to go back to on the story about the blaster, about it's at that who's auctioning it off, which is more of like a gun auction. There's a news story that came out. Brian Manafort, who's a historical weapons expert, he was appointed firearms acquisitions and promotion specialist at Morphy Auctions. I guess that this is the next coming craze, probably with guns. I mean, because we're not only talking about Davy Crockett style guns. We're talking about all the weapons that are out there in the world. This is pretty interesting.
Yes, you're basically seeing I think more auction houses getting into. And it's not like you can just jump into becoming a gun auctioneer or gun auction or offer it in sales. They're regulated, licensed. You have to have special permits for handling and transporting. So if you're picking up a consignment in one state and you have your auction house in another, you have to be able to do all the paperwork for transporting, not only safely in making sure that they're secured, but also that you're adhering to all the regulations in any kind of transport. So Hindman, we do have a arms, we call it arms and armor, but it is a arms, armor, and militaria collection that does handle both the historic and older guns as well as more contemporary guns. And that is, it is a marketplace that there are people that do purchase. And again, it goes to that, what we were talking about with Hitler earlier. A number of our specialists who run the department, they were at a convention, you know, and it's a convention, and there's NRA, you know, the NRA is there, there's all the pro-gun people, but it is a marketplace, and it is something that is viable, both historic and contemporary, and not only the guns, but also the ammunition and all the other things that go along with it. So I think that you're going to see that they're recognizing that there are there's a lot of material that's out there, and there's a lot of desirability. Just put it that way.
People are responding to the need.
Yeah. Well, one of the quotes from the story is it's a pretty wide this isn't just blood and guts guns. I mean, what goes for? I mean, you look at the lineage of wars for just the United States. You know, the creation of our country and on. But it includes things that go along from our battles with what we did to American Indians. It talks about cannons, cannonballs. Sure. There's a whole lineage of things. And you know, we come from an area here where Old Ironsides, the United States naval ship that never lost a battle, its wood came from this area, and the cannonballs that they used on Old Ironsides came from this area. I mean, so the history of armaments and guns goes back so far. It's more than just shoot 'em up stuff. I think it's pretty important stuff that, once again, you can learn from. You learn about history.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I mean, all the historical aspects that go along with it, what was happening, what was going on in society as well. So it is something that is more than just, this blood and guts, as you said. It's much more that goes along with that, and the historical aspect, and also what was going on in society for the historical, as well as what's even going on in society today. Yeah.
Now we're going to go to that area that we all hate to go to, but I'm just going to read the headline, and we'll go from there. One of the first of its kind, Philips Generative Art Sale fails to generate strong sales, dampened in part by June's crypto crash. As a matter of fact, many items didn't get any buyers auctioning off at all. And that just goes along with what we're talking about with the NFT craze, which is really at a low point now because of what's going on with crypto.
We were talking just yesterday about this, and my question to Tim was that, well, okay, so if the crypto is down, what is, how is that going to affect the NFTs, these art things? And it's just like the Beanie Babies. It's going to, it's just going to tumble. And my question was, the people who, we were talking because it was like a Rolex, what was that, Tim? The Rolex no. that?
What the gist of the article was with the, so during the boom of the NFTs, there were, it made a lot of young millennial people that jumped in and made a lot of money. They also then were cashing some of that money in to buy Rolexes, Patek Philippe, some really just wonderful watches. Well, now with the downturn of the crypto, which this says a whole lot, this is the gist of the whole thing, is the cryptocurrency is manipulated. It's just a, you know, there's nothing really backing it. It goes up and down. So they used that when it went really up to put something into a tangible object like a Rolex or a Patek Philippe watch. Now what they're seeing is those wealthy, rich millennials that had all that money and no longer have it are now turning to sell those Rolexes and Patek Philippes, those tangible objects, because they're getting low on cash and they need to sell it. So this was an illustration of here's the up and the down. And here's something also to contrast what you had started saying, Marshall, is that you said that Philips, you know, their NFTs, hardly anything sold of these objects. And there's an article that goes back to 2021, and this isn't that long ago. This is like over a year and a half ago. Philips sold a NFT for $4.1 million. And, you know, to have that, and almost a year and a half later, you see this decline in the marketplace. This is what's going on. And this is what happens when there's a lot of hype and there's nothing really there to back it up. And we're seeing that it's affecting other markets, like the luxury markets, like the watches, and I'm sure jewelry, is that I'm sure that they purchased a number of things, but good for them if they did, because they're going to be able to at least get some of that money back.
See, I'm thinking, I don't know if you've noticed on television, but lately, over the past several months, you're seeing a lot more television advertising and radio advertising for gold, buying gold, investing in gold. And you're starting to see less of the crypto advertising. I don't know if you've noticed that, but it's something that I've noticed, because every time I hear anything about gold, that's the first thing I think of is, okay, here we are, gold backs up things. Gold is something tangible. You can, you know, its value is in its weight and what the market has dictated it's selling for on this any particular day. With crypto, I still don't understand, because nothing, there is, somebody just made up this word and they just created a market. And I think the only people, and this happens in a lot of areas, I think, for me personally, I think the only people who ever made money on this are the people who started at the very beginning and got other people to invest their money in this invisible currency. And now those people have lost a lot of them have lost millions and millions and millions of dollars. So I'm still back at my original belief that money has to be, and you know, all of the offshoots of it, like these NFTs, is art and everything. That market is just drying up, and I don't think it's ever going to come back because it's based on nothing. It's like the emperor's new clothes, in my estimation.
Well, the whole thing about it, and we'll wrap up, is that the lure of cryptocurrency and everything that came along with it is that it was, quote, unregulated, quote, by the government. The government couldn't step in, and it was a Wild West market. And the Wild West market, like anything else that's not regulated, we all don't like our government stepping in all the time. But you know what? You need some guardrails. And if you don't have those guardrails, you're prone to the incredible highs and then the incredible lows. Simple enough. That's the great thing about what you guys do. There's guardrails on what you do. There's guardrails.
Right.
You have rules you have to follow. It's not just you just don't go in there and have a sale and say, oh, this is from the 12,013. You know, you have things you have to prove. And that's the standard that brings long-term success.
Yeah, and you said something very interesting there. We have ways to prove. And I still don't believe there's any way to prove that cryptocurrency is ever going to be anything other than just hype. I don't think it's, I'm thinking we're kind of seeing the end of it. I think it's going to be, my feeling is it's going to be like the pet rock. And I just believe in things I can touch and see and and feel. I just don't believe in this area out here, this ether of, well, you just reach out in the air and there's your, you just make up this money. I just don't get it. And I will fully admit that I might be behind the times, but show me the money.
All right. And with that being said, we'll speak to you guys next week. All right.
Okay. Have a great week.
Take care.
All right, have a good week, Marshall.
Right, bye-bye. Take care, Tim Luke and Greg Schraub, the appraisal guys, the Frick and Frack of Nick and Knack, with, of course, Appraise This. You'll find them on the web at tqag.com.